New year, new McGuinness. Well, not really. We like to think that life changes on big events. And that's why we make New Year's resolutions. But I've found that life changes when you change it. And when you change it, well, sometimes it's only when you have to. It's my unconventional life. Ding dong. I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately. To front only the essential facts of life and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness and this is my unconventional life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? I feel a nebulous fog in my head. Nebulous, unclear, vague, or ill-defined. A confusion, perhaps. I know, I'm speaking in riddles. I've been reading Derren Brown's book, Happy. Derren Brown, for those of you who don't know, and shame on you if you don't, is an English television mentalist and wonderful, kind, intelligent guy who is actually one of my top five idols and inspirations in life. Derren Brown, Ricky Gervais, Jonathan Ross, Russell Brand, and my dad. Anyway, I read some of Derren's books on magic in the past, but his latest book is about the philosophy of happiness, based largely on the wisdom of the ancient Greeks. I was hoping it could give me some insight into finding some clarity in my head right now, but alas, it seems to be just backing up some thoughts that I've already been having. I hope this won't sound arrogant, but I've done a lot of work on myself over the years, figuring out who I am and what makes me happy, and it's totally in tune with the direction that he seems to be going in the book. So perhaps confused isn't the word. Maybe torn is the word. I don't know. It's funny, when I think of Airy now, there's this sort of odd dichotomy, as though there are actually two Airys. The one that I look forward to seeing when I come back from being on the road, the gentle, calm, beautiful soul carrying my child, who only wants to be loved and supported and doesn't judge. And the idea of Airy that in theory seems to be in conflict with what I want and need and what we originally agreed upon, that I'm really struggling to find a place for in my head. Or perhaps I'm just creating two versions so I can be with one without addressing the other. Again, this is hard for both of us because I'm sure she feels torn between both of them too. This all sounds a bit confusing, I'm sure, without all the details, but like I said before, now's just not the time. And perhaps that's a reason to stop with this entirely. I really don't know. I felt myself missing my dad a lot recently. I always maintained that I didn't miss people. But I really should have amended that by saying that I don't miss people if I'm going to see them again. When I know that I'll never see them again, then I miss them. Not all the time, and with my dad it wasn't right away. I felt his presence, his influence, his genetic parity, if you will, for a while after he passed. But with time, I have felt it ebb. It's been over 2 years now, and certainly with the impending arrival of his granddaughter, I found myself missing him considerably at points. I think as much as anything, it's because I've struggled so much emotionally over the last 6 months that I just wish I had him to be able to talk to about it and get some advice. Which is kind of funny because when he was alive, I never talked to him about things like that anyway, but I guess I always felt a support from him nonetheless. And my sister has been great in taking that role now, and I see a lot of him in how she listens and suggests things intelligently, kindly, but realistically too. I guess the thing about my dad, and my mum too, is that even if we didn't talk about things directly, I always felt so loved and supported that I knew things would be okay in the end. And I guess here recently, there have been moments when I just haven't felt that way. Some real fears and genuine anxieties, but perhaps that's normal, again, when you're going to be a parent. I hear that it is, that both parents, however they got into the situation in the first place, have some dark, difficult, politically incorrect thoughts at points. But perhaps, again, it speaks to the somewhat insular notion of pair bonding and an isolated family unit versus the world. Okay, that's it for me this week. You know, I think I'm going to start trying to go to church, which is going to be hard because I leave most Sundays before I can go, and no churches in LA seem to have services or even be open any other time. And it might seem odd too because I'm still a staunch atheist, to be honest, but I find there's a peace and joy not dissimilar to meditation that I find when I go there. And maybe that's all the same thing, the idea behind it, the thing that links us all. Okay, now I'm really going. Look, it's time for the second part of my interview with my original trainer, Les Thatcher. He speaks about some of the same conflicts that I've been feeling between work and family life, the strength of which ebb and flow depending on the week and the influence of other people. Anyway, all right, back to me and Les. Jealousy is a human emotion, 100%.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But in every other aspect of human life, like, for example, your neighbor's got a nicer car than you, your best friend starts dating someone that you like, when we say, oh, I'm jealous about that, we go, oh, well, you shouldn't be. You should get over it. Be secure in yourself, et cetera, the material things or whatever it happens to be. But when it comes to being in love or in a monogamous relationship, then jealousy is sometimes even encouraged. And if you don't feel jealous about your committed partner, then you don't really care about them. And I don't think that's healthy. You know?
No, I would agree with that. And you know, that's something, as I've gotten older, that the jealous part has diminished. I mean, I think we're all inborn with a certain degree of jealousy. I mean, it, you know, expands due to personalities and surroundings and so forth and so on. But I've found that at this point in my life, that's not necessarily a part of my thinking to begin with, you know. Don't ask me why, because I'm not really sure, except you know, maybe with just the aging thing, you realize that you don't have that control, and what's going to happen is going to happen.
Yeah.
And so to sit and stew about it or pull your hair out or get crazy is a waste of your time and effort, because it's not going to change it anyway.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm sort of coming to terms with that now in terms of the agreement that Ari and I had in terms of going to a parenting partnership has changed organically. And for a long time, I was really fighting it and feeling like this isn't what I originally wanted, and am I giving up my ideals? And now I've just sort of accepted it, and not in a defeatist way whatsoever. It's just the nature of relationships change, you know.
Well, you remember how I emphasized in your wrestling training being able to call it on the fly? Life's pretty much the same way, I think, too, a lot. I mean, you as a young man had plans, and I'm to a certain degree, they got dropped how many years ago? When did those plans go, right? Or myself, you know, I think of all the things as a young person I wanted to be or do, and then some of them were accomplished, others weren't. And I think as you get older, sometimes you just realize that, I don't know if it's karma or fate, or you tag it with a name, right? It's what's going to happen is going to happen.
Right. But is there anything, is there any thread that was there the whole time? Is there anything that you sort of, is an integral part of you from when you were 21 years old that's still there today?
Well, I think a part of belonging or being a part of something or someone. Like back in my teens, before professional wrestling, you know, I was big into racing, drag racing. Mm. And I was a member of a club. And it was like being a part of something was important to me.
I see.
And I think still today, being a part, well, of the fraternity that we're both a part of, but generations apart in terms of actual participation. Yeah. But through your success now, I find comfort in that. I find I've been a part of that, regardless of how small a part, right? Mm. It's not like it belongs to me, but I touched it in some way, you know?
Yeah, so that sense of community, that sense
of
being.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Because it's interesting. I remember, wasn't too long ago, actually, I read a couple of books that sort of turned me onto the idea of consensual non-monogamy, and there was a book written by a guy called David Dada called The Way of the Superior Man, and he talks about how in the 50s, certainly in America, there was a big sort of divide and everything was far to the right, where men had to be men and women had to be women. And then what happened in the 60s and 70s is this all got sort of turned around.
Right.
And men were then were supposed to be, you know, far more in touch with their feminine side, and everyone was supposed to be the same, et cetera, et cetera. And what he said was that the problem with that is that we're not all the same. Men have different desires and hormones than women do.
Sure.
Men and women should be equal, but not the same. So in his book, he talks about trying to find that happy medium by still owning your masculinity but not being an arsehole about it, if that makes sense, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And one of the other things he talks about in it, whether you're a guy or a girl, wherever you are in between on the spectrum, is knowing your true purpose, knowing who you truly are. And a lot of people go through life and they never sort of figure that out. And for me, I always used to say, well, my purpose was to come to America and be a professional wrestler and prove that if you have a dream and you never give up, you can achieve that. But then when it didn't work out for me, I struggled for the longest time and I thought, is my life a failure because I didn't really get to WWE as a performer, et cetera, et cetera. And then I thought back on my life and I'm like, well, I only really got into wrestling when I was sort of 13, 14 years old. Was there anything before then, or is there anything that's like been an undercurrent in my life that's never changed? And when I thought about it, the one thing that's always been there is that I love girls. Like, not a girl, not I want to fall.
We have something in common, right?
But when I sort of realized that, and I was like, ah, okay. Ever since I realized there were boys and there were girls, I was sort of obsessed with them. I loved everything about them, the way they looked, the way they smelled, the way they sounded. I just wanted to be around them and take care of them and make them smile. But not just one. I didn't want to find one and fall in love and spend the rest of my life them to the exclusion of everybody else. I wanted to just the whole concept of womanhood, you know? And so when I realized that and I sort of accepted that and said, this isn't something that you need to hide. You can actually embrace this. It's not about fucking as many girls as I can at all, right?
Right.
It's about connecting with.
Although Flair made us both look like pikers when he mentioned 10,000, right? I'd have to live to be 190.
They did the math on that, right? And they said that he'd have to sleep with three girls a day which is pretty nuts. But anyway, when I realized that and I thought, wow, that is true, that and when I accepted that and was sort of open with girls about that, everything else in my life fell into place. There were plenty of girls that when I said that to, that, you know, I don't believe in monogamy for me at this point in my life, they were like, oh, well, thanks for being honest. I'm not looking for that. And, you know, let's just be friends or whatever else. But I found that I found my own sort of place in the world because of that, you know. And so for me, we talk about adapting relationships and whatever else. And that doesn't mean, again, being non-monogamous doesn't mean that I have to sleep with more than one person at the same time, in the sense that, you know, you could be homosexual. You don't have to sleep with someone of the same sex to be homosexual. That's just who you are. You know what I mean? You can make those changes. As long as to your core you still believe that's who you are, then...
You scared me there for a moment. I thought you were getting ready to come out to me. I thought, nah.
What do you mean scare you? There's nothing wrong with being gay anyway. You've got plenty of gay friends.
No, there's not, but I thought of all the people I never would attend. But you know what? And I think as you get older, and you're not... as old as you may think you are, you're still very young and vital.
41?
Oh, my God, yes.
Is that young?
Yes. I felt extremely good at 41.
Where were you at 41?
Well, I was living with a young lady 22 years my junior when I was 41.
Of course you felt young.
Yes.
Was that phrase, you're only as old as the woman you feel?
You know, that was a great, honestly, that was a great relationship. And it, because it was so multi-sided, right? Because I was a mentor, a teacher. I was her first man.
Wow.
A lot of responsibility came with this, right? Now, here again, her youth, the vigor of her youth.
Yeah.
And she was older mentally because she had skipped junior high school and gone straight to junior college. You know, and when we first met, I never would have guessed her, you know, being 22 years my junior. I mean, I knew she was younger, but I would have thought much older because she came across as much older.
Right.
But the thing that happened in that relationship was that it came to a point where there were things that she hadn't experienced, and I'm not talking about anything physical or anything,
right,
that I had, and I looked at the world through a different, through a younger set of eyes, and there were things that just really intrigued me about that, right?
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it, but then it came to a point where, well, she wants to do this, and I've done that, and, you know, so it was just basically she outgrew me to a certain degree, right?
Right.
But it was an amazing relationship in the time, almost 4 years that we spent together.
Wow. So then when the relationship ended, you could make an argument the relationship ended because it was an exclusive monogamous relationship.
It was, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so perhaps at that point, if you just said, okay, there's things that she wanted to do, there's things that you've already done and you couldn't accompany her with, but you could still maintain portion of that relationship, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it was, for me, the hard part is to have invested myself completely into this person. And like I say, it was so much more multifaceted than any other relationship because of the age difference.
Yeah.
That it hit me harder when it was over, I think.
Right.
You know, not that I, you know, shouldn't have been able to accept it because I'd been down that road, you know, with other relationships.
Right.
But I think in part because I had to invest so much of myself into this. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I did. It was a great time.
Right. I mean, I think there's something to be said for that. And I think oftentimes, and it's not just necessarily young women and older men. Sometimes it's the other way around as well.
Sure.
It's
Well, I remember a relationship, just a brief relationship like that at age 19 with a 38-year-old woman, you know, which was quite a learning experience. Yeah, you can't, this is not television. You can't see the fiendish smile on Nigel's face as I bring this up. But, well, you know, and we're talking about a different upbringing too. Realize that when I grew up, you know, I was born in 1940, so I was a teenager with, you know, Happy Days and American Graffiti. I lived that, right?
Yeah.
And it was a whole different moral thing, too, right?
Right.
And then to realize that at 19, to be put into the situation of a wrestler in the public eye, that I never looked at myself as being wanted or special, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I didn't have to go looking for companionship. It came looking for me in all sizes, shapes, and forms, and ages, and everything else.
Wow.
So to say you're not going to taste that elixir, you'd have to be pretty much a liar or have no emotions whatsoever, right?
Yeah.
That's one thing I think that the 57 and a half years I spent involved in the wrestling business, it's taught me a lot about life. I'm not sure it's made me 10 cents, but it's taught me a lot about life.
Yeah. If you had to like sum up what it's taught you about life, broad strokes, what would you say?
It's unpredictable.
Okay. Yeah.
extremely unpredictable. No, and no matter, I mean, you know, we talk about, you mentioned it earlier, if you go out and want something bad enough, you can, not always, that's not all, you know, it's a great line, and we hear that all the time in our business, right?
Yeah.
And there are, you know, he put his mind to this, and this is what he wanted, all good things happen to those who, no, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, no, they don't, because you and I both know people who probably deserve better, and for whatever reason aren't getting better. You know? A lot of us, where are you at a certain time, at a certain place, and a certain something happens, and well, when you and I were doing the tournament thing, and I got tired of hearing you say, well, you know, until I go to, but you have a legacy, and I couldn't make you understand how proud I was to have been a part of what you had done,
yeah. And,
but you had this particular goal in your mind, right?
Yeah.
That you had to reach, and now you have reached it, not as a physical in-ring performer,
right?
But I know that the accolades you received from the people in the community, people who said, you know, they enjoyed working with you on the microphone, people who have said that you're good at what you do. So unexpected, did I ever expect to be a broadcaster or producer of wrestling television? Not in my wildest dreams when I was 19 years old. It happened. And like what I did with magazines for the Mid-Atlantic and for Vince Jr. with WWWF.
Yeah.
I said to Jim Crockett Sr. one time, hey, these are nice books here, these photo albums. You don't do them anymore? Well, the guy that used to do those lessons, why don't you try to do one? Who, me? Yeah, you. So I ended up putting things out in wrestling magazines that had never been done before because somebody just happened to open that door.
Right.
So the best laid plans of mice and men, right. Sometimes the idea that you had at 19 or I had at 19 is a hell of a lot different for you at 41 or me at 77, yeah. Right?
But so if that's the case and things oftentimes don't work out the way you planned, what can you control? How can you influence your life in a positive way?
Scary part is probably not very much, right? If you stop and think about it, when you walk out of here today, you have a plan.
Yeah.
Will that plan vary? It may vary because of traffic. It could vary because of weather.
Mm.
It could vary because you're going to get a call from the people you work for saying, we need you to do this instead of what you're planning to do.
Right.
So I don't know who's in control of my life, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Right now you are.
Yeah, it's a fair point, isn't it? All right, I know. It's crazy. Did you ever think when you were, you know, in the 60s and the 70s that things were going to change categorically in terms of relationships or not?
Well, you know, you saw that coming, I think, in a lot of ways. And of course, as a young male with hormones, the fact that women decided that it was okay for them to throw themselves at you, you didn't see that as a bad thing, right?
Right.
But then it could have its, you know, its problems as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's that whole notion of, what did they say, the Madonna whore complex, right?
Yeah,
like you want a woman originally to be wild and crazy. Well,
you know, something I've noticed with, of course, now I'm not around the young wrestlers that much, especially not in a social situation. But it's funny, you know, I've heard my contemporaries, my peers over the years would say, wow, you know, I saw this female and such, and she, you know, red hair, this or that, and boy, he was, you know, one of, you know, and oh, hey, I met her. I finally was introduced to her. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, she's really nice and this and that. And then a few months later, well, we've had sex and she's just a bitch, right? Wait a minute, what changed, right?
Yeah.
Because you were a conqueror, something changed, right?
That's enough for now. There'll be more next week. More of that, more of me philosophizing, trying to say stuff without saying stuff. Have faith that the air will clear eventually. Have faith. Yes. See you next week. That's another week gone. What have I learned? And what peace have I found? Cheers for taking the time to listen to the podcast. Drop me a line at myunconventionallife2016@gmail.com if you have comments or questions. And if you like the show and know someone else who might get something out of it, tell a friend. I will be back next week with a week's worth of thoughts and emotions and hopefully some joy. But until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, try to be kind to others, but as much to yourself. We're all fighting our own battle. Lead with love.